Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. In a few moments, Neil Coulon from USA Today. And then Dave Meeks from USA Today. We'll go pro football with Neil. And then we'll go with college football with Dave. And tomorrow, Scott Satterfield, the head football coach at Appalachian State, is going to be on the show with us. Let's get to our play-by-play call of the day. Alex Bregman, big three-run homer just when the Astros needed it against the surging Oakland A's.
Middle infielders play about halfway. Third baseman Chapman backs up, first pitch, and Bregman hits this in the air to right. It chases back Piscotty, still going back. He leaps at the wall, and that ball is gone! It's gone! A three-run home run for Alex Bregman. And the Astros get some insurance. They lead this one 8-4.
Calling the Astros radio network as they beat Oakland last night 11-4. Alex Bregman, who seems to have the flair for the dramatic, hit the big home run last night and put the Astros over the top. Phillies, meanwhile, struggled with the Nationals last night, as heard on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Tonight, though, Aaron Nola goes on the mound. This is what you need from someone who's perceived to be your ace. Your ace stops losing streaks. That's what they need from Aaron Nolan tonight.
Yeah, we get another Aaron Nola Max Scherzer matchup tonight.
Yeah. This is a big one.
Yeah.
This is a big one for the Phillies. They need to really stop the sports version of bleeding here. Okay? All right. Neil Coulon, USA Today. We have a lot of ground to cover here because the final preseason game is coming up. The cutdown's coming up. Le'Veon Bell is coming up. And Jerry Jones's idea of 18 regular season games is on the table. Neil, welcome. The Landry Jones Invitational continues. Welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
I'm doing very well. Doing very well. It's a gorgeous day. It's a great one final week of the preseason till they can strap it on and get out there. I'm looking forward to real football here.
Yeah. How has Landry Jones done?
He didn't really do much. You know, we haven't seen a whole lot of him. What I really remember that in that first game against Philadelphia, I thought he took two sacks pretty much right out of the gate. But yeah. He made some nice throws. He looked a little bit more poised in the pocket for the limited amount of opportunities that he had. But that's what a veteran backup quarterback should look like nowadays. And I think, you know, he held up well for what you'd hope that he was going to do this season. There are too many people that probably expect a little bit too much out of a backup quarterback. If he's good, he's not going to be, you know, number 33 overall in the league. He's going to be competing for a starting job somewhere. That's not going to happen. And at the same time, a team like the Steelers are not going to get necessarily a starting caliber quarterback right now to back up Ben Roethlisberger. So, I mean, Jones fits in well with what they're looking to do, and this being the final year, the two-year extension he signed last year, I'd imagine he's playing his last preseason game for the Steelers.
Yeah. Let's get to the real serious questions about this. Ben got into his only preseason activity. You know, it was to be expected that there was some rust, but did you have a feel as to where he is right now?
I thought he looked pretty good. I mean, he missed James a few times kind of high, and I think some of that might be the result of where he was trying to put the ball. And when you speak of rust, that's kind of what I think of. When a quarterback is rusty, he tends to throw a little bit higher than he would normally, and some of that is your footwork, your stride. You're not striding enough because you might not be flexible enough at that point to you know, be able to deliver a pass that's above the shoulders of a receiver, but it, within a window that he can catch it. That's really tempting to launch it as high as you can when you're throwing it at a tree like Jesse James. But he missed him a couple times. That was a little unusual. You know, he didn't quite see that coming, but he made some great throws. That ball to Hunter in the corner was phenomenal. He looked like Ben to me. You know, I thought that first drive, the offense performed very well. Didn't work out the way that they probably would have wanted. But play to play, they look good. The offensive line, I think, is there, and that's a lot of time without Ramon Foster to kind of, you know, gel and get better in that regard. So overall, I thought they held up well for what you could expect from them offensively through three preseason games. You got to be happy about that.
The interception by Edmonds, what did he show you?
Oh, that was great. Just the burst that he made on the ball, and more than anything, this team just gives Marcus Mariota fits, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, he does.
You have to go back to the probably early 2000s, mid 2000s, with the Cleveland Browns to find a quarterback who just really can't figure this team out. I thought Edmonds did exactly what he was supposed to do. The pressure kind of forced it more than anything, but the break to the ball, the ability to catch it, secure it while going to the ground, then get up and run, where he really was impressive. That burst that he made when he saw a seam, he saw a little bit of a line, he took off, and man, that kid can fly. I don't think I really saw in his college tape burst like that. And I'll keep saying this just because I'm happy to be wrong, but I was absolutely surprised when he was there picking the first round. And my thought was, this has the potential to be a real legitimate bust, which would be another first round pick that they've had recently, who just really hasn't panned out for anything. But he might be the best one they've taken in the last couple of years. I really like the way that he's developing his game. He's making plays. He works hard on the field. You can tell. I mean, he's roaming around really fast. He's physical. He's aggressive. It's going to be tough for them, I think, to keep him off the field significantly come week one. I think he's going to play quite a bit.
Let's get to the next one up. This is the one where it's really roster spots, I don't know, 40 to 45? Really? Even that many? What are a couple that you'll be looking for to see, where you've seen them, you think they're better, and they've got a shot to make it, but this could be a make or break for them?
I think when you're putting a roster together, I think it's really fluid, and it's something that has to come to you. I think what they try to do is remove any and all doubt that they can after 3 weeks of competitive play. Because, yes, your starters play well into the first half, if not the entire first half. The second half is really the pregame for the fourth preseason week. I think that's a big part of the reason why, despite the multiple penalty flags in the second quarter, Jalen Samuels was running until his tongue touched the ground. Right. I mean, he got the ball every single play for like 12 straight plays. Right. His best ones got called back from penalty, but I think they really wanted to see if he's going to be their third running back, and, you know, counting Rosie Nix just purely as a fullback. Keeping four running backs is probably what they're going to do. But the real trick with that is, did Samuels do enough to say he's going to be on the roster pass Le'Veon Bell being put back on the roster? For him, he's got another week outside of the 53-man roster cut to be on the team. Somebody's going to get released when Bell comes back. They're going to keep 53. Bell does not count to the 53 until he's back. He
That's
signs.
Right.
He's on reserve right now. So when he does come back, they'll have to cut somebody. They're not going to cut it down to 52 and save a spot for him. They're going to see what happens across the league. In doing that, I think it buys them a little bit of time to not just evaluate the fourth preseason game, but to kind of take a look at what they need for that week of practice. You know, Bell won't officially be added again to the roster. I think the rule is like Friday of that week.
That's
so
right.
They'll get a week of practice with whoever it's going to be. And I think with that, it's an opportunity for a guy like Samuels. I really think he's the key one to watch. Maybe it was just me. Maybe it was the level of athleticism that the Titans defense showed. But you saw a player, you know, he's got to be the slowest running back we've seen in Pittsburgh in a long time, but they weren't anywhere near him. They just didn't catch up to him. It was just kind of weird. Like, is he moving a lot faster than we think he is? Because he just kind of lumbers. But I really liked what I saw of him. And he really kind of blends into that multi-purpose back that they thought he was going to be, a guy that can catch in the backfield, a guy that can block. And he's able to carry the ball a little bit as well. I think he's the type of player that they would like to have for situational football at different times. But it might just be that, you know, he's kind of a jack of all trades, but master of none when it comes down to the roster cuts, and a fifth-round pick is right on the fringe of where you really don't want to have to cut a guy. So I don't know. For me, I think that's the key one to watch. What's his utilization going to be in this game? And from there, it's going to be a wild ride. It always is. You never know what's going to happen come cut-down day. And retrospectively, I think we'll be able to kind of take a look at Thursday's game and get a sense of what they were trying to do. But for now, it's you know, anybody who has a chance left, they're going to be in that game.
Do you expect Le'Veon Bell to play the first game?
You know, I have a sneaking suspicion that this is the year they're going to kind of say, you know what, let's not use him as much right away. I really like what Connor has done to this point. He looks 100 times better than he did last year, which you should kind of expect from a third-round pick who got a decent amount of time his rookie season. I mean, granted, he didn't get the ball a lot, but he was in there fairly often, played on special teams. He's been around the program the whole time now. He looked much better. I think he looks like a legitimate, consistent running back in the NFL. So yeah. With that, come week one, I think this is the year they're going to kind of, I don't want to say send a message, but they saw what happened in Cleveland last year. Bell was terrible. The whole offense was terrible in a lot of ways. They're not going to let that happen again because, frankly, this is a much better Cleveland Browns team. And I know that wouldn't have taken a whole lot for them to be a lot better, but they're going to be competitive. I don't mean they're going to the playoffs, but they're not going to be nearly the doormat that they were last season. They're going to have to get on top of things right away. And they in all honesty, they should have lost that game for a billion reasons last year. And Cleveland's not going to give them that chance this time. So they're going to need somebody to run the ball consistently. I think you're going to see Connor get the ball a little bit in this game.
I was in Pittsburgh the last couple of days, and the word I was getting from people obviously I trust was that Marcus Allen was not only going to play, he was going to play a lot on Thursday night. What are his odds right now with this team?
I like him as a special teams guy. I think that the size that he has, the athleticism that he has, he worked pretty well, you know, in that second half, kind of, you know, as I said before, preseason week four, you know, pregame. He looked good. I like the way he moves on the field. He's got a good eye for the ball, and he hits. You know, we've seen that plenty in his career. More than anything, it's obvious this team wants athleticism probably above all else in the secondary. And I think drafting him where they did kind of puts, I don't want to say an emphasis on it, but they really don't have any homegrown talent in the secondary. I mean, you know, their two best cornerbacks are probably right now Mike Hilton and Joe Hayden. They didn't draft either one of them. Yep. They don't have them on long-term deals. They've got already Burns. That's great. You know, I don't know how much that really helps, but you had to pick up a safety here in free agency, you know, in Morgan Burnett, exchanging out another free safety that they had brought in. Sean Davis has got 2 years left. You're still not sure what you know, where he's going to be in terms of his development. They need to find people that can actually stick, and I think they're trying to make an investment in this draft. I think Edmonds and Allen both give them, you know, guys to look at. Obviously, Edmonds is going to stick around, but Allen's somebody that, you know, he's going to have to be a core special teams player. But I think to this point, he's probably done enough to bump Brian Allen off the roster. And Brian Allen was last year's fifth-round pick who was taken for special teams. I think Allen is a football player. Marcus Allen's a better football player than Brian Allen is at this point. And I think that's going to show itself within these cuts, just simply because I think, you know, the Penn State safety can probably, you know, it contribute as much on special teams, and he's got a bigger future as a player. So you have to like where he's going right now. I don't think they get rid of him either.
Jerry Jones resurrected an old proposal earlier today when he said the NFL should go to 2 preseason games and 18 regular season games. And he said, look, you know, and he says that the injury factor, quote, isn't quite what people make it out to be, okay? Or, you know, it gives, he says, playing fewer preseason games and actually starting up right away, it actually would be better. I know how the Players Association feels, and I know I've really enjoyed those games over the years where it's the third-string quarterback against the guy you just signed the other day. What do you think about 18-2 versus 16-4?
A couple different ways to go about it. And what's unfortunate to me, at least when I read it, what I thought of was like your basic cable package. You don't want these things, but you do want these things, but you have to take them in bundles. You can't take them a la carte kind of the way that you want. It's not a question of wanting 20 games total the way that the owners are going to want for obvious reasons. The players have to play in 20 games. They're going to want their salaries to reflect, you know, the markup per game as opposed to,
yes,
you know, 17 weekly slices the way that they have it now. They're going to want that raise. there's a whole battle that's going to go on with that. Outside of it all, where the fans would sit, I think anybody in their right mind, I couldn't imagine anybody's going to say that they would rather watch a preseason game than a regular season game.
Right.
Especially when costs are the same to go to it.
yeah.
Overall, though, they're just for me in this business, you definitely see a lull. If your team really isn't all that competitive, by about week 10, week 11, week 12, it really starts to kind of drag on. October into November can get kind of dull. Lengthening that, I don't think is going to have quite the result that the owners think that it will. But what they're really saying, in my opinion, Jones and his contingent, what they're saying is fine. We're not going to let go of 20 games. If you don't want to play preseason games, that's fine. Then I don't have to change my ticket prices. I don't have to do all this stuff. I don't have to deal with the negative publicity surrounding it. But his overarching point was injuries are injuries. You know, they're going to happen at any point. And he, by and large, he's right. I mean, statistically speaking, injuries do not happen all that often across the board in the NFL. It's the severity of the injury. It's who the injury happens to. It's what happens to a team when a certain player gets injured. All of those things are largely unprevented. And they're not going to be able – fans, anyway, can't really complain if the injury happens in week five versus in the preseason because then at least the guy played. What Jones is basically saying is it's not going to matter to us either. If you really want to get rid of preseason games, fine. We'll tack on two regular season games on top of it. I think that really draws out the season. I think the wear and tear is going to build up anyway just because now it's two more games that they have to play as opposed to, you know, sit on the sidelines and drink Gatorade. And along with that, too, this is probably a dumb angle to take, but what about the history of the game? You marked it up from 14 games to 16 once. Therefore, this generation of football is going to dominate any and all individual records. The same thing is going to happen in the coming generations. Do you really want to mark up things that much? Is it worth that substantial of a change, really twice in one generation? Do you want to mix it up that much? For me, I say 16 games is fine. Find a way to make other two preseason games more interesting. I mean, what about joint practices? Charge people to go to that. Put them on pay-per-view. If you give access to that kind of thing in a similar way to like what you do with the Pro Bowl,
they'll love
people
it.
People would rally around that.
They'll love it. Oh, they would love. Yeah, fans would
honestly
love it.
If you have ever sat, if you've been fortunate enough to be on the sideline of an NFL game, you walk away from that with a completely different perception of what the NFL is. It is a completely different experience. It's not at all what you think it is when you watch it on TV. I'm not saying necessarily better or worse. It's just really a completely different viewing experience. I think today's audience would eat that up, you know, and they do a good job of it. I know everyone hates the Pro Bowl and complains about it like it's a, you know, some type of civil right or anything, but people are able to absorb much more when you hear what the guys are talking about. They're not just clowning around. That's kind of fun too. What are the things that they're discussing? What are the coaches doing? What do the plays sound like that they're calling? All these things you really can't get from a TV broadcast, and you really start to see more of how complicated the game is. I think a lot of people would enjoy just that perspective of it. You know, that's just me. I don't know if there's any talk to that, but I know that certainly joint practices are on the rise. I wouldn't be surprised if this is something they kind of, you know, want to look into, and Jerry Jones would be just the guy to do that.
Yeah, and he would be. And I see what I mean. Look, I see where he's trying to go with this. This is not a new proposal. People have talked about this before. But here's where I come from with this. Baseball should probably be, in the end, 132 games. Hey, I'm talking about idealistically. Basketball and hockey should probably be 60 games. Football should not change from 16 games. Okay? Less is more. And I think part of what has allowed football and the NFL to thrive over the years is because less is more has made the seasons more interesting.
I agree 1,000% with that. That's really,
oh, it's about
looking
time.
Back on it, people want to make the features of football be much more important. It's much more about the interaction that people have. It's much more about fantasy football. This is the reason it's popular. It's not. It's popular because of the anticipation of it. Baseball is the exact opposite. They play all the time. It's impossible to get excited about one regular season game. Right. You, at the bare minimum, have to look at it on a series level, which is three games long, 3 days in the middle of the week. you don't really get excited for that. There's just so much that goes on in those three games. One NFL game, it really one quarter at a time, one play at a time, all these things make the product that much more dramatic, and that's the natural advantage that they will always have over every other sport. While the NBA, NHL, they have great playoff structures.
Yes.
That's the only time of the year that they really have anything in which there's a day-to-day excitement about what's going on. The NFL is like that every single day of the week during the season.
Yes.
And it's just because everything leads into that one game. Everything goes into Sunday. And that's I don't think you really want to mess with that. I really don't. I don't think it should be longer. I don't think it should be shorter. I'm not saying that 16 is like the magic number or anything. I just mean don't mess with it any more than what you have already. The game has to change in dramatic fashion. Right now, it has over the last 10 years. It's going to even more in the next 10 years. Don't mess with a whole lot of this. You're not going to be able to get away with this forever.
Right. Always a pleasure, Neil. Appreciate the time.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
And yeah, thanks so much, Neil, because to be honest with you, I feel very strongly about that. I think the theory of more is more, because we need more games to get more revenue so we can pay everybody more and more and more. And I think you've got to realize you've got to leave people wanting more. Okay? Leave them wanting more. More is actually less. That's one thing about football. Football, because of the 12-game college schedule and then a period of time until the bowl games start, and the NFL, for the most part, when their season is over, because it is so limited, it leaves you wanting more. I mean, do you leave a baseball season wanting more? Do you leave an NBA or NHL season wanting more? Unless you're really massively, like the diehard, you know, the fan that loves it beyond words, which I get. There are certainly people out there. But you've got to leave people wanting more. More is less. Okay? Less is more. I think I reversed it there. But less is more. That feeling like, okay. You know? I felt like it was just getting going, and then, okay, well, all right, well, the next season comes up, I'll have a greater anticipation. You keep stretching out seasons and stretching out seasons. You are going to stretch out interest to the point where people are like, okay, it's another week, it's another game. And they don't have as much meaning anymore. I know the Phillies are in a pennant race right now, but how great would it be if it was 132 games and the season ended August 31st? We'd be into go time right now. Before football season began, we'd be in go time right now to make the playoffs. I think it would make it more interesting for everybody. Less is more. And when it comes to me speaking on this show, a lot of people feel that way. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Dave Meeks, USA Today, next half hour.
If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. Every new Hyundai comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty and Hyundai Assurance. Sunbury Motors Hyundai will work hard to get you approved on a brand new Hyundai Elantra. Bankrupt, divorced, slow pay should not be an issue at Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Why settle for a used vehicle when you can bring your bruised credit to Sunbury Motors Hyundai. 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the black building on North 4th Street in Sunbury. 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, final half hour of the show. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We're going to get to Dave Meeks of USA Today on the coaches poll. The opening games coming up on Thursday night, including Northwestern taking on Purdue Thursday night. It's a five-day college football fest coming up starting on Thursday in Northwestern and Purdue. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, we will have for you, of course, Penn State and Appalachian State on Saturday. All right, with the Jordan McNair case being investigated right now, his death on June 13th from the incident from May 29th where he collapsed at practice at a workout. Maryland's going to issue its review of everything on September 15th. With that in mind, the widow of a former Grand Valley State University quarterback, Cullen Finnerty, was among four family members of deceased college football players who filed wrongful death lawsuits against the NCAA yesterday, alleging brain disease caused by concussions that led to the players' premature deaths. Now, obviously, in the McNair case, that's not going to be the case, but it is interesting that this suit was filed. The lawsuit was filed by Jennifer Finnerty in Marion County Superior Court in Indianapolis. Her late husband was knocked unconscious and suffered multiple concussions and or subconcussive impacts to the head during games and or practice while playing at Toledo in 2001 and then at Grand Valley State. In fact, he played against Penn State, in fact, in 2000, I believe. The widows of former San Diego State linebacker Jeff Staggs, who played in 65 and 66, and also UCLA and Long Beach State running back Rodney Stensrud, who played in 69 to 73, and the mother of USC fullback Doug McKenzie, who played from 77 to 81, also filed wrongful death suits against the NCAA on Monday. McKenzie's mother said, "Our family has filed this lawsuit against the NCAA to make a difference. Too many football players have gone on to develop brain disease, including my son Doug, and the time for change has come. We want football to be as safe as it can be, and we want student athletes to be aware of the terrible consequences that concussions early on can have throughout their lives." An autopsy in 2013 for Finnerty, who died of pneumonia caused by inhaling his vomit after he had become disoriented because of painkillers combined with having chronic traumatic issues, the degenerative brain disease that had been found in a number of ex-football players also was found in him. The medical examiner's report said it was likely Finnerty had anxiety, disorientation, and paranoia from being alone in the woods while waiting for his in-laws to pick him up. Finnerty's brain was studied at Boston University. Now remember, BU has been one of the leaders in this area. And they looked at it in August of 2013, said the severity of CTE was moderate, and that it was highly unlikely the disease alone caused his death. But Jennifer Finnerty still filed the lawsuit against the NCAA. So those four have been filed in that particular case, and we'll now see where it goes from there. Obviously, it's going to take a while. The NCAA, of course, is always lawyered up, and we'll see what progress, if any, is made, and if there happens to be any money that will change hands in here, except for the money that goes between the plaintiffs and the lawyers. Dave Meeks, USA Today. The coaches poll, of course, is one of the two polls that we look at during the course of the year until we get to the college football playoff poll, which doesn't happen until late October. Dave Meeks, old friend, joins us from USA Today. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Steve, I'm doing great. It's really great to talk to you guys. Hope everything's wonderful up there in State College. It's 90 and very humid today in D.C., so hopefully you're doing a little better than that.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, tell us a little bit, just so everyone understands, how the poll actually does work. I think people can guess how it works, but you know, you can tell us exactly how it works.
Well, you know, there's lots of polls out there. One of the things that makes college football so much fun is not everybody plays everybody, a lot of based on opinion, how things match up. We have the poll that involves the coaches. The 65 coaches we use from the top level of college football, it rotates. They're picked at random by the American Football Coaches Association. And really, we are just the administrator of the poll. We help promote it. We help drive the message for it around the country. We do some, we take the trophy on a tour. That's how we met when I was up at State College with the trophy last season. And every year, you know, you'd be surprised. People pay attention to who has a vote in the poll. It rotates around even among conferences. I did look down before we had our visit today to see that James Franklin does have a vote this year. And contrary to what, there's jokes about all this sometimes, you know, that SIDs send in votes and all that. It's not really the case. We find the coaches take it very, very seriously. They know that it matters. We don't reveal any coaches' votes during the regular season. We reveal the vote one time only at the end of the season when the Crystal Football is awarded.
When do they have to have these votes in that? You know, because obviously you've got a deadline with the paper, but when did they need to have the vote in so that you can then move forward with it?
You know, we get them in as soon as the action's over on Saturday. We do have to wait. You technically need to wait for every game to be played coming in from the West Coast, which, as you guys know, early in the season you have some of those crazy times where you have USC might be finishing up against Utah. Sometimes the Pac-12 will open up with a conference opener starting at 11 p.m. Eastern, right? And so we have to wait until all those are in. We can't ask any coach to have a vote in when there's still a team, two teams on the field. So after that, things move pretty quickly, and I have someone assigned to, you know, outreach, I call it. That means calling coaches who don't have their vote in to get it in. It's all very friendly, and they're very busy, and they're really great to work with, and I got to tell you, we never have an issue, and even if we did, we have the AFCA and Todd Berry behind us if we need any help. But the coaches take it very seriously. Sometimes, if you're not getting a vote, it's really because a team is traveling or something's going on with the team.
What if a coach wishes to split a vote? For example, all right, you know what, I'll pick a circumstance. Say it's November, there are only two undefeated teams. Coach wants to make both of them number one. Can they do that?
Yeah, we've never done that for the regular season. We have done that as we've headed to the playoffs, and we've talked about it. You know, in my opinion, it doesn't necessarily bother me. It makes it a little tricky for the computers to count it, but, I mean, you're basically just taking the points awarded for the number one team from each coach, right, and you're dividing that in two. The question becomes, where it gets tricky is how does it affect that guy's vote for the second coach? I mean, you know, this is not a PGA Tour event where the money just filters down, right, and you just divide more among the guys behind him. You now have a guy who's voting differently from everybody else. So that's been the issue in terms of the regular season.
Right. What's your level of excitement with this particular year? I know there's obviously been some off-the-field stuff that USA Today is doing a great job of covering, but what's your level of excitement about the upcoming season?
Always very excited. You know, I love college football. I think that football is going through an evolution in terms of developing safer ways to play the game, but I have spent a lot of time around college coaches in particular, as you know, and, you know, I think people tend to paint with a broad brush and don't realize I've met so many coaches just who have dedicated their lives to just helping people, coaching people, not only in football, but off the field. And you see these relationships between these guys and these coaches years after they've stopped playing for them. I think that only happens for the most part at the high school and the college level. And, you know, to me, it's one of the great passionate sports in the United States. And so every year is different. I know our poll makes it look like every year is not different, but, you know, you never know. You know, I always say this. You look at teams like Wisconsin. If you look at these, the way the polls shook out this year in the preseason, it also mirrors kind of what people are expecting within the conferences, right? You'll notice that. The conference order kind of matches up with the full poll. But it never turns out that way. And so, you know, I would say that you have, you know, basically they're calling for a Wisconsin versus Ohio State in the Big Ten playoff. Well, maybe that could happen, but you could easily see Penn State or Michigan State or Michigan or even, you know, you never know if the other side who's coming up. You know, I expect Nebraska in the Big Ten. Maybe not this year, but trust me, I've spent some time with Scott Frost last year. He is a big as the program that is going to be on the rise.
All right, that's a good point. Dave, USA Today is a brand, 36 years. It is established. What does having this poll does this poll enhance the brand or get the brand name out there even more so, even though you are an established?
Absolutely, it does. And I'll tell you, you know, there's not that many national sports operations that do it the way we do it anymore. You know, there just aren't. As you've seen the shrinkage in the media industry and certainly cutbacks in the print side of the business, we have a very strong digital audience. I don't think people realize that the USA Today Sports Media Group, just in sports, on our digital sites alone, is about 42.5 million unique visitors per month. So that's a big sports brand that people rely on. And to me, this gives us another great conversation point. You know, I came to the Trophy Tour event, and that was really one of my favorite days in this job, you know, getting to visit State College and sit outside on a beautiful day in college football with you guys. And then I went to the trophy stop, and we had Franco Harris come in from Pittsburgh to meet fans and shake hands at the trophy. And, you know, he only was really asked to do that for a couple hours, but he didn't do that. There was a huge line to see him, and he stuck around and visited with every single person who was waiting there to see him. And to me, that's the kind of stuff you see in college campuses and around this game that make it so great.
What challenges are there in a sports room when something, you know, as an example of Ohio State happens? What are the challenges, and what's on your checklist saying, okay, we have to make sure we're covered here, here, and here? What's the challenge of that?
Well, the challenge, from my standpoint, is to be very credible and very responsible and very focused on not saying more than we can say based on the news that we know. And you do have opinion columnists who are going to argue various points. You know, we've had actually two columnists argue the separate side of this issue. One was saying that, you know, if Urban Meyer didn't report this and didn't know about this, then he should be gone. Another saying, well, if he's saying on Friday he did report this, then maybe he's met the law and it's not about him. I think you and me, we don't really know all that happened.
That's right.
We do know that there's various rules on things being reported, and we don't know the nature of what happened. We know what the coaches said on Friday, and to me, my biggest concern is I don't want us to go beyond the news that was as we know it. I don't want us to go beyond the facts. I don't want us to assume anything. I want us to wait and give people the chance to comment. You know, this has been a long-running saga, obviously, between Zach and Courtney Smith. And there are, in the midst of all that, if you think about it, with Title IX on these college campuses, a lot of these rules have been very evolving over the same period of time. So I think there has been probably delays, probably mistakes being made here and there in how things are handled. But I also don't think you have to rush to the conclusion that means someone automatically loses their job. We just don't know that.
Right. And over time, there have been other things that have been covered. Now, obviously, one of them was here. But there have been other places that have run into issues such as this. How much do you learn on a week-by-week basis as someone that's in charge as to how to handle it? Do you handle something different now than maybe you would have handled 20 years ago differently?
I think so. I mean, my job is to make sure that we're capturing all perspectives here. And I remember when Penn State went through with the Sandusky scandal and how horrible all that was. You know, I talked to a lot of people from all sides of that, many, many very devoted Penn State alums and friends of mine and people I know across the country. And, you know, often you find when these things happen on a college campus that the people very closest to that school are just as horrified by what's going on as everyone else. And you have to try to understand that. And it isn't a case of where everyone's looking out for the football team or everyone has a single tunnel vision on this. You know, people do react in different ways. I also think that these scandals all tend to get treated the same. You know, they get treated the same at every single school, and they're not all the same. Every one of them is different. You know, we don't even really know at this point what happened at Ohio State in terms of what was reported and to who and when. That's all going to come out. And so I think that you have to, like, wait and see. It does take some time. It's a very impatient world. You have to wait and see kind of what the details were, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly the tack that we've taken here. Like, hey, look, when something happens, we'll talk about it. But let's see what the results happen to be.
I did find it interesting, didn't you, that the statement that Urban Meyer put out Friday did not sound ambiguous.
No, it did not.
It did not sound like he did not think that he hadn't done this right or he had been vague. It sounded like he understood what the rules were. And I can tell you, we have pulled his contract, and his contract does stipulate what he's supposed to do in those situations. So he would be aware of it, and what he said Friday was consistent with that. So we'll have to wait and see what that looks like. I also think in all of this, he and his wife, he had acknowledged that he and his wife in the past had tried to counsel the Smiths as a couple. Yep. And maybe that was a case where they were trying harder than maybe they needed to try to be there, you know, counsel them and help them out in that way. But, you know, what he said Friday was, in addition to all that, he did follow all the protocols and procedures, as the phrase he used, not only there but at Florida. So he did not sound like a coach who was unfamiliar with it and did not know.
Right, exactly. As opposed to Chicago.
Right.
Because in Chicago, he acted like he just got a text the night before.
That is odd. I think, you know, those conflicting narratives is what has everyone, I think, talking even more about this. And it's hard to say what was going through his mind that day. You know, I just can't speculate. Who knows?
Nobody
he didn't
knows.
Want to talk about it, obviously. But clearly what he said on Friday was his actions were that he had followed all the rules. So.
I want to finish up by talking about the poll for a moment. Now, here,
sure.
I'll give everybody a good example. Who was the number who was the number three team a year ago? It was Florida State. Okay,
yes.
Florida State played Alabama in the opener. Quarterback
never heard from again. Right?
Yeah, quarterback got hurt again. Into the witness protection program they went. So
how many times, you know, Steve? How many times have you seen that? How many times have you seen a team? I know you remember this team. It's a Big Ten team. I remember when Brady Hoke came to Michigan and he went down to play to Alabama in that preseason game and just got annihilated.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that happens. But how, for you, how interesting is it that when you sit down and you put together a top five and it's voted upon as a top five, the last 4 years, it seems like it's pretty similar year in, year out. To start the season, it doesn't mean that's how it ends.
Well, it is looking a little bit like the Alabama Invitational, that's for sure. you know, they've been in it every single year. I've got relatives in Alabama. You think you have it bad? I've got relatives who call me up in the preseason and ask me questions like this. Who do you think will be in the playoff with us this year?
That's nice. Yeah, that's just great.
They're writing in Sharpie. That's not in pencil. They're writing Alabama in a Sharpie. We're in. Now that's pressure on Coach Saban. If you don't think that's pressure, how'd you like to have that pressure? It's just assumed by your fan base you're going to be in the National Football Playoff every year.
Well, they already bought tickets for it, so, I mean, that is even more pressure. So,
But, I mean, that's what makes it the fun. You know, Penn State's got an interesting team this year. You got some.
Yeah.
I think Big Ten, to me, has the most interesting cast of quarterbacks. I think there's some great-looking quarterback questions, great quarterback questions in the Big Ten that could pan out this season. There's some players out there with a lot of talent, some of them less proven, but sort of known in terms of what they can do, including the kid at Michigan State, who I think is very underrated.
Werke is really good. I obviously saw it firsthand. He is very, very good, Dave.
And you've got McSorley, and you've got Haskins coming at Ohio State to look good in his preview, and you've got Shea Patterson transferring in and playing right away from Ole Miss at Michigan.
That's all so, in one division.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? And I always say this about the Big Ten. You look around the different leagues, and one thing I think the Big Ten gets overlooked for is there's often some really good quarterbacks in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and then we'll see what Alex Wunderburg does over at Wisconsin. It'll be pivotal for them as to what he does. Well, you mentioned it's hot down there. Just so you know, we moved my daughter into her new place in Alexandria, Virginia on Saturday, so we know how hot it is.
Oh, you were down here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was you picked a good one. That was nice and humid. We've had a lot of rain, and then it stopped raining Saturday just kind of bake it out in for a day, and luckily that was the day you were moving. But by the way, that's a beautiful place, Alexandria.
Yeah, it's a great place. Hey, thanks so much. You know I always appreciate it. I always just enjoy the conversation back and forth. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Absolutely. Look forward to doing it again this season. Call me whenever. Take care, guys.
Dave Meeks of USA Today. And we will get Dave back on the show several times during the course of the season. Talk to him about the poll, but also talk to him about college football in general, because Dave has a great handle on it and the issues in college football. Let's see. Bryant over Lawrence at Clemson. All right, Kelly Bryant, I mean, Jack and I looked at it, because Jack and I did an event last night at the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh, and it's like, okay, Kelly Bryant, neither one of us could see it. Now, it was interesting, Alabama, Jalen Hurts, and Tua Tagovailoa were listed as co-number ones, like you need gamesmanship for the Louisville game, really? Louisville. Okay. Louisville. Right. It's interesting, but I thought Desmond Howard, to his credit, I know a lot of people criticize Desmond Howard, but I thought he made a great point on College Game Day about Tua Tagovailoa. and that was this. He's left-handed, which gave Georgia a completely different look than right-handed Jalen Hurts. They had really no tape on him, so they weren't really that prepared for him. People in the offseason had prepared for Tua Tagovailoa, right? Because now they have a tape as to what he can do and what throws he likes to make. So it's all going to be a question of adjustments. He's a great talent, although I just see Westgate labeled him as the Heisman Trophy leader. What, based on one half of football? Really? And again, Desmond Howard's right. They now have tape on him. Right? Defensive coordinators do not just play golf in the offseason. They look at a lot of video. And if he's really good, he'll overcome it. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We are looking forward to tomorrow's show. Can't wait to talk to you here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.